basically what the America did in this case, and this whole process that even ANSCA, our natives, this is the first time in 13 years that I've had anything to say about what happened, what did happen, or what's happening. What I'd like to see is more natives assert themselves and say, this is our land, and if it is ours, we should be able to tell the people in Washington that the conditions that we want in reference to our land. We should organize statewide and say what we want, not tell them not let them have them tell us what we in other words, we can't even say have any say so very little say so over our own land. They dictate to us as to what we can do on our own land. It shouldn't be that way. That's basically what I've got to say. I think us Natives, we got to organize statewide and present a stronger voice. We're just a few people here, and I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe not very much. I don't know what's going to happen after these hearings are completed. But we're going to wait on people like you, and we're going to wait for your decision. It's basically not going to be up to us. You're conducting hearings, but the final decision is going to be made by whom?
Well, the final decision in the end is made by Congress. But I, you see, I'm here because the ICC, which is a Native Peoples organization, set this thing up. So Native people in the ICC said, let's take a look at this ourselves. Let's have our own hearings. So that's why I'm here, and I'm writing a report that will be based on what you tell me and that you can then use to decide what you want to do at that stage. But it's really, in a sense, going to be up to you. I'm certainly going to write a report, and I'll send it to you as soon as it's ready. And if it reflects truly what you have told me and what you want, then you're in a position to use it for your own purposes. If you were to go yourselves to Congress and say, look, here's somebody who spent a year traveling all through Alaska, this is what we told him, this is what he said, we think that this reflects what we want, then you can go on from there. But in the end, I think you're right. It's up to you.
I get the feeling that we're talking about peanuts for the natives, and when we should be talking about, we should be saying this is our land. We're just, they're tossing us hardly anything, as far as our own land is concerned. We should be talking more like this is our land, and we should be able to assert ourselves and say that what we want done with our land or how we want to handle it.
Thank you, sir.
I'm here again, and I think you people are tired of me for speaking for my people, but I'm an uneducated person, not like you people, but I know what's our land is our land. And when the Congress make the law, can't we even appeal what the Congress say that what we don't like, we can appeal. In any court, you can, when you're in a court, you can appeal, right? I don't know. Well, anyhow, I think a Native people can appeal when they don't like what they're not treated for. So That's all.
Right.
They can appeal, can't they?
Well, you can always go to court. You might win, but you might lose, too.
Well, but us Native people don't try hard enough. White people always keep on going till they win, right? But us Eskimos, we give up too easy. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Honorable Berger. My name is Andrew Daniels, and I'm from Elam. As you already know, that Elam is a former reserve. We're in the same status as the St. Lawrence Island villages, Gamble and Savunga. And under ANCSA, Elam chose Section 19B, as I mentioned. And of course, we as landowners, although within the Bering Straits region, has a unique position in comparison to our neighboring villages. We own surface and subsurface land. We denied the money or the monetary settlement. And before ANCSA, we're former reserves, we, our people lived very, according to what our government chose us to live. You know, we were given the land to sustain reindeer herding, and of course education. That's under Bureau of Indian Affairs. And of course, but after ANCSA, we continue to live more or less accordingly, and we didn't jump into any big development as yet. But I'm leery about after 1991. What is the status? What status are we going to live?
Well, you have corporations and you hold shares, so after 1991, if ANCSA isn't changed, if enough of you sold your shares, the land, the corporation and the land could fall into the hands of outsiders.
This is what bothers me. And with the right course that, you know, we follow and educate our younger generation, then maybe in the long run we could hang on to our 300,000 acres of land and, you know, live happily ever after. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Could I ask you a question? In Alaska, before ANCSA, reservations were regarded by the non-natives, at least, and many of the natives, as a bad thing. That is, and the idea was, we don't want reservations in Alaska. They are okay for Indians in the lower 48, but Alaska natives don't want them. So that there weren't a great many reservations here. Well, you had a reservation at Elam before ANCSA. How did it work out? Was it a good thing or a bad thing, or do you have any observations to make on it?
I would say that it was a good thing, because our ancestors or our forefathers, you know, they lived and according, like I said, according to what the federal government has asked them to live by for the preservation or the sustenance of the reindeer herding and, of course, education.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for meeting you at this time. I'm Florence Aloya from Gallivan. As a native of Western Seward Peninsula and a shareholder of Bering Straits, in matter of land claims, it is a big question mark to me because I was born about 60 years ago and was all mixed up in that time. We had school going and we attended school and we could not talk Eskimo and we'd be punished. And many of us were confused because we were trying to learn. I think it was the three R's majorly, and that's reading, writing, and arithmetic, it said. And I have a lot to say here, but I'm just going to, I've written a lot I want to say, but I would like to comment on what ANSCA should do in the future. Train up the children that are, or teach the children of their rights. And we have tried teaching our ways of living in subsistence life, and even trying to teach our children, Eskimo children, to teach their language, and that's bilingual and bicultural. We were confused because so much of it is modern living now, we'd say. We'd have to have cash money to buy our food and clothing. And in our small village of Gallivan, jobs are being fought over, it seems, because of the many different lifestyle and many new modern ways. And it's frustrating to see that going on. And just last night, my grandchild said to me, "How come you have health problem? How come you use the substances that was harmful to your body? I did not know of the danger that it had in using the substances, of which you may all know what I'm talking about." And that brought the question to me, will my children know, will my grandchildren know if they are tempted to use any substances like that? We are taught now what harm there is by using them. And I hope that my concern is that ANSCA should go in and have more teaching on whatever is to be taught for this thing we're going over. And share has been popping up in my mind, and holders. I would say what, where, and when, and how. And it's a present, future, and past. Will the children that were born after 1971 be able to have their say in whatever problem there is for their existing life in the future? So about all I have to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Well, would anyone else like to say anything this afternoon? Yes, sir.
My name is Bruce Tungwanuk, and I'm a member of Nome Eskimo Community, Wales Native Corporation. I'm a citizen of the state, and citizen of the United States, and all of those combined make it really complicated. All of us live under the same, all of us wear those same hats, you know, and we got to live by the state's hunting and fishing regs, the United States Congress laws that they pass, which ANCSA is a part of, and got to live with all the local laws and all the my point leading up to is, which our previous speaker just alluded to, was that our parents were punishing it for speaking Eskimo, you know, and it my generation now is just learning how to speak up, and the people that were punished for speaking Eskimo in the classroom are just learning how to speak up again. I'm scared stiff right here, you know, just trying to speak, but I think that in order to implement the laws that we want to see, we have to come up with more political leaders in the state representative realm and the state senate and in the United States Senate, so that we get laws that are equitable to our way of thinking. I'd like to address a question to you, Commissioner Berger. How much longer are you going to be holding these hearings?
Here in town?
No, statewide.
Oh, I will finish, I think, early in the new year.
And the hearings are commissioned by the
Inuit Circumpolar Conference, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel there's a real need for people my age to become educated. I'm just starting to, to work at policies concerning how we're educated. First of all, we hear about the bilingual and the bicultural. But I, you know, it just, in my mind, it just doesn't meet our needs as to how the courses are taught. You know, we have a board that is politically elected. We're voted into, but at the same time, there's the administration who, through their force of will or their force of character, pass these laws or at any level, whether it be the local school board or the regional school board, as to how these bicultural, or and I would include a course in high school on the Alaska Native Land Claims Act as part of that. I think there needs to be more involvement from, and you know, we're still learning how to deal with that kind of political process. I just thank you for your time, and thank you for letting me share your views here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm Maria Dexter from Gullivan, and before coming to Nome to go to this meeting, I was asked by members of the traditional council to try and gather people to come and testify. So I went around in the village asking people if they'd be interested in coming to this meeting. And a lot of people that I asked to come to Nome to testify said that they hardly are up to date on this Alaska Claim Settlement Act or were uninformed on what was happening. And I asked people my age, and they hardly understood. I mean, they didn't know what to say when they came over here. And it would be a good idea if this act could be studied or taught, because to me it seemed like the only people that understand this act are the people that work in the regional corporations or with the corporations in the villages. And I think it would be a good idea that people in villages understand this act better, because people that live in the villages are people that do a lot of hunting, subsistence living. And once we lose that land, it's going to be real hard to try and find a way to feed our children, or, you know, because there aren't that many jobs in the village and very few people get to work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, when I was going to school in Anchorage, they had classes on ANCSA, and at the time, the teachers really didn't know the real true definitions of Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and they were going by ear and by what was written down on the original act of the Native Claims Settlement Act. And he really didn't define on what Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was at the time during school, and I would like to see the real definitions of what Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is. So I tried to learn it while I was in school, and our teacher really had no idea what it really was. And I've got both copies of 1971 Act and the 1980 Act while I was in Barrow during the ICC Commission meeting in Barrow while I was up there. And, you know, I really would like to understand a little bit more about what ANCSA really is all about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Buck again. So far in this meeting, I've learned that we can't claim any more native allotments. We can't claim subsurface. We can't claim village allotments. We can't extend our village allotments. We can't appeal ANCSA. We can't include younger children in ANCSA. And our subsistence will be eliminated in 1991. And as far as I'm concerned, this is just a vehicle to take our land. Thank you.
Yeah, the important thing is, it seems to me, that ANCSA, though it was the instrument for conveying 44 million acres to the native corporations back in 1971, is the same instrument under which, after 1991, that land could be lost. That's the conundrum that ANCSA presents, and that's why it seems to me the vital thing is to figure out how Native people can retain the land that they did get back in 1971. the question of subsistence is not as easily understood. Subsistence rights were abolished by ANCSA in 1971. Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights were abolished, but under state and federal law, Native people continue to have their right as Alaskans and Americans to hunt and fish, subject to regulation. That's the difference.
While I'm listening, I think people are just confused on Native land claims and Native allotments. Native allotments, I understand, is the First Act. That was way, way before 1971. Wasn't that in 1939?
Well, Native allotments came in 1906.
But then the way IRA relates that,
well, IRAs came in 1936.
1939.
And ANCSA came in 1971.
And then every time they speak of Native allotments, I think they're confusing that with Native land claims of 1971, which have two different kinds of laws.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Needs to be repeated, that the people holding allotments under the Native Allotment Act, 160 acres, they can't be taxed, their land can't be taken away, they don't have to worry about 1991. It's the ANCSA lands held by the corporations that might be lost in 1991. That's the difference.
They are pretty confused about that. And under Native allotments, I believe we have just the surface rights. But under Native land claims of 1971, I understand we have subsurface rights according to different kinds of minerals. We can claim the gold, but we cannot claim geothermal, oil, and coal. Those are the only minerals I know that are always spoken of under Native land claims that we cannot have. They belong to our government. But when it comes to gold, we can dig around and claim that gold under our Native land claims if we have 160 acres. That's the way it was explained to me. Mm-hmm. The more I think, the more I listen to these people, they are confusing the two acts, and they should be understood.
Yeah.
And listening to the villages, I really feel deep down and know, because I came from a village myself, and on top of it, we used to live way, way far away from a village itself, 2 months at a time. And I really appreciate subsistence when it comes to that, because when I was growing up, as far as I could see was my father's hunting ground for one certain thing. And when we want something else, we'd go on to another area that is still my grandfather's hunting ground, as far around as I can. And then for another certain thing, we go to another area. And there was no boundary. As far as my eyes could see, it was my land. It was my grandfather's land. And then when it comes to that, I know I was born at the right time. Maybe some people will feel sorry for me because I belong to the elderly. But then I enjoyed that very much. But when it comes to different kinds, when I was sent away to school when I was 15. And I am fortunate on that also. And coming to a village, I really feel and understand what they go through. And living in a city and become citified, and then we're going back into land ownership and into subsistence again. When somebody goes after me about a little bit of land that maybe you can just measure in feet, my heart hurts. I can't even sleep. That's the way land is. It is very important. That's why it is called Mother Earth. I don't want anybody to pull that board from under me. My feet are want to be right down in that solid ground and know that it belongs to me. And landowners should really do plenty to have that right.
Thank you. Well, would anyone else like to say anything this afternoon?
I know many of you, but I'll state my name for the record. My name is Mary Miller, and I'm expressing my personal opinions here this evening. And I'd first like to say that it's a really good feeling to know that someone's finally listening to us. You know, we go to annual meetings, and I'm speaking in the context of being a shareholder here. And often it's like hitting our head against a brick wall, trying to make ourselves heard. But I think this is a real unique opportunity for us because someone's finally asking us and saying to us, we want to hear you. And I still, it's still kind of unbelievable to me. The first thing I want to say is that we were never given any land. We gave up, or we lost 90% of the state. This entire state was ours to begin with. And when the Land Claims Passed Act, we ended up with 10% of what we used to have. Nobody gave us anything. We sacrificed 90% of what we had. And I think that has to be really made clear in our minds, because there are a lot of people that tell us that we were given something. We weren't given anything. We made tremendous, tremendous sacrifice. And I think that when we look at the history of Indians in the lower 48, they can attest to what we're going through now. This entire nation belonged to the Aboriginal peoples, and look how much we have left to say that we can claim as our own. I think we really need to keep that in mind. The two things I wanted to briefly mention is the impact on people and the future of our lands. When we talk about the impact on people, I'm talking about the everyday ordinary person who is maybe not necessarily a real leader in a community. But as ordinary people, native people, I think we are displaced. We are displaced as a result of ANCSA and other prior contact with Anglo society. I say this because when profit corporations were created and the lands were transferred in fee simple to the corporation, this set in motion a series of forces that at least for the time being have displaced us. And what's the definition of that? The definition is that we have been removed from our proper place. And when I say that, I'm talking about when you look for through the corporate eye, our relationship to the land is altered. We draw our identity as a people from our relationship to the land and to the sea and to the resources. This is a spiritual relationship, a sacred relationship. And it's in danger because from a corporate standpoint, if we are to pursue profit and growth, and this is why profit corporations exist, we would have to assume a position of control over the land and resources and exploit these resources to achieve economic gain. This is in conflict with our traditional relationship to the land, where we were stewards, we were caretakers, and where we have respect for the resources that sustain us. Tribal values are group-oriented, not individualistic. And I have to laugh sometimes about ownership of land, because deep down inside, how many of us really think we own it? We want it to be there for use by our people over time. But can we really say that we own something that is God-given? Alaska Natives find, many of them, and I've been hearing this all afternoon, This concept of corporations is alien. The corporation structure is alien to our culture and experience, and we're still struggling with it. Suddenly, we are capitalists, stockholders in business corporations created to make profit. The ANCSA Act was also divisive. It divided us. We were divided into 12 regions, and within each there were individual corporations in each village. Each must look out for itself. Where sharing was once the norm, and where several villages once shared common hunting and fishing grounds, each corporation now has separate selections of land. And in the process of selection, it has often been the case that villages have battled over who would get particular areas that they had historically shared, willingly and peaceably. The cash, the money that came with ANCSA. As the cash economy has become more common, many shareholders have come to expect monetary benefit from the corporations, and this is only natural. And when they haven't gotten the level of individual dividends or monetary benefits they believe they're entitled to, a growing dissatisfaction and disillusionment have set in. Part of the problem is that many shareholders don't comprehend the complexities of the corporate structure, and this gap has not been filled. I think it's obvious just in listening to people today. Since 1971, there's been an absence of understanding about what the land claims means and what these provisions mean for the future of our people. A well-informed stockholder must attend meetings regularly and vote knowledgeably on every issue. In addition, look what we face. We face financial statements, we face proxy materials, annual reports, solicitations, and other complicated procedures that corporations have to go through in the course of annual meetings. And if one doesn't even have a basic understanding of any of these, we feel lost. And then more and more frustration sets in. The effect on people, for many, myself included, the act has created much unhappiness and fear. I fear that we will lose our land. In this region, we face a lot of uncertainty because of the financial difficulties of our regional corporation. I fear that in order to ensure its survival, it will attempt to accelerate development and to raise revenues. I fear that the village corporation, I fear at that level that leadership has become too trusting of oil companies and mining interests just because of the economic gain to be realized. And I'm going to use a term that I heard earlier. Oil companies are barracudas. They will get you if you let them. They come in, and through the media and through their financial donations, they try to look like Mr. Nice Guy, an upstanding member of the community. That's their approach. That's their approach here in Nome. And most people are fooled by it. Here they've got their foot in the door. Their only motive is profit, and history has proven that to be true. Are we going to be fooled by them? And will we come out the loser in the end because of not realizing this? Another thing that bothers me is, why should economic development be a given? Why should that just be assumed? Economic development, growth. I believe that there's a fundamental re-evaluation that has to be done. In studying this, we need to have heavy, ongoing involvement with the people, Native people at the community level. In the area of land, it's our responsibility to select the option or set of options that guarantees maximum protection of our lands over time. We need to lock up our lands tight to make sure that they will be in Native hands forever, not just for a few years, not just for the short term, not just for our generation, forever. To achieve this, I don't see how we can leave them in existing corporations as the law stands now. There are too many dangers and too many risks of losing them. The strong supporters of corporations need to evaluate the reasons for their loyalty to corporations, to the corporate ideal. Become open to honestly looking at what it'll take to preserve Native ownership, and take the courage, whatever courage it takes, to support it. If we lose our land, it'll be because of our own short-sightedness. And without our land, we have no right to call ourselves Native. If we lose our land, we will be Americans with brown skin and with no more identity than that. What I've said may seem harsh, but I have taken the risk of saying it, and I think I've taken the risk of alienating people. And at this point, I'd like to say something. I have strong views, but the only ground rule I have set for myself is working for my people and working towards guaranteeing that our lands stay in our own hands and guaranteeing and expanding our ability to govern ourselves, to make our own decisions. That's all I'm saying. And if what I say runs against somebody's grain, I'm sorry for that. I don't like to have anybody upset with me, but I need to say what I think. And I want to say that, you know, oftentimes we underestimate what we have. You know, I hear people talking about not being educated. I've gone through the educational system. I've gone through 18 years of it. And I don't feel any smarter than the next guy. I look up to and I respect people who only have a third grade education. What is that anyway? That's just judging ourselves according to white standards. People with a master's degree are supposed to be smart. That's all it is. We have to judge ourselves according to our own Native values. And I want to say this, that I believe we have the intelligence, we have the resourcefulness, we have the ingenuity to survive as distinct peoples with our lands intact. I believe that we can do it. But to do it, we have to set aside our personal differences, and I know there's a lot of that within communities and among communities. There's a lot of differences. We have to set that aside and work together. I know we hear that a lot too, work together, work together. It's not just a phrase, it's something we have to do. Identify and agree on our common goal of survival as Native people. And I think we have to be prepared to sweat blood to achieve that goal. Don't let divisive forces win. We can rise above all of that. Land Claims Act was a very divisive thing. There's all kinds of forces, outside forces, that set out to divide us. Within the communities, we have different types of government. They're very divisive in many instances. Some of our communities are working on that in a very good way. And that's what gives me hope. We can rise above that. And we can beat all odds that are against us. I know we can. All we have to do is affirm our ability and be clear about what we want. Reconciliation is very necessary where differences have divided us in the past. I hope we can depart from this hearing with greater hope and greater determination. This is a time where all kinds of different points of view are coming out. And I think it's important for us to respect each other's points of view, but it's important for us to identify what's common among us. What's common among us? And go from there. You know, I know it's easier said than done. I realize that. It's, you know, differences run deep. But we don't have the luxury of being divided anymore. You know, we face very perilous times ahead of us. And we don't have that luxury of being divided. We have to somehow, within the communities, we have to get together and work together, and among our communities do the same thing. And it's something I have great hope for. I'm willing to work. I want to stay in this region, and I want to work with the people in the villages and in the Nome area. And I just hope that we can pull it off, because without our land, what are we? Thank you.
Well, I think this would be a good time to adjourn for supper. and we'll come back again tonight at 7 o'clock. Thank you all who spoke. And if you wish to come again tonight, you're most welcome. And we'll just carry on tonight for as long as you wish.
Thank you for coming. I'm sorry I haven't had the education that